Bis zum 7. Mai kannst du dich noch zum Female Leadership Programm anmelden. Im Juni geht es los. Sprich jetzt mit deinem Arbeitgeber oder buche als Privatzahlerin zu stark vergünstigten Konditionen auf female-leadership-academy.de.
You know, the impact player way of leading, it's a fluid form of leadership. It's about stepping up and leading, but then also stepping back and following others. It's about very much situational based leadership. The situation needs a leader. Let me step up and do that.
Herzlich willkommen zum Female Leadership Podcast. Mein Name ist Vera Strauch und ich bin Host hier im Podcast, in dem es darum geht, dass du deinen ganz eigenen Stil im Job und Leben findest und deinen Weg mutig und selbstbewusst gehst. In dieser Folge habe ich einen ganz besonderen Gast zu Besuch und zwar die Autorin und Wissenschaftlerin Liz Wiseman. Liz forscht seit vielen Jahren zu Themen rund um Führung. Liz ist außerdem Executive Advisor und berät Führungspersönlichkeiten aus der Wirtschaft über den Globus verteilt zu Führungsfragen. Bekannt sind ihre New York Times Bestseller Multipliers, The Multiplier Effect und ihre Wall Street Journal Bestsellers Rookie Smarts und ihr neuestes Buch Impact Players. Wir haben uns über genau die unterhalten, nämlich über die Menschen, die ganz besonders großen Impact haben in Organisationen. Wer ist das? Wie wird man so? Und kann jeder zu einem Impact-Player werden? Das sind Fragen, über die wir uns unterhalten haben. Darüber, was bedeutet eigentlich Führung? Wie sieht Führung in der Zukunft aus? Was können starke Führungskräfte machen? Welchen Unterschied machen sie? Wie führen sie dazu, dass andere Menschen noch besser werden und wir gemeinsam über uns hinauswachsen? Ein wirklich sehr bereicherndes, inspirierendes, einladendes und ermutigendes Gespräch mit Liz Wiseman. Ich habe mich riesig gefreut, sie hier zu Gast zu haben und freue mich deshalb jetzt umso mehr mit dir dieses Interview zu teilen. Ganz viel Freude beim Hören und dann legen wir gleich mal los. On the show today is Liz Wiseman. Liz is a researcher and author of New York Times bestsellers, Multipliers, The Multiplier Effect, and the Wall Street Journal bestsellers Rookie Smarts and Impact Players. And in your role as an executive advisor, you're teaching leadership executives around the world. I mean, your experience and your work in your books, it has had such an impact on my work. And I am so happy to have you here. Welcome to the show, Liz.
Oh, thank you so much. It really is a delight to be here.
Before we dive into the concepts, especially of impact players, which I find super interesting, I am curious, how did you find your way into researching? How did you become someone who's inventing and seeing and also putting language to new ideas and concepts in a profound and helpful way?
Well, I got into this work. In some ways, I fell into it, but that sounds really passive, like somehow it was a hole and I just, you know, stepped and fell into it. I just was sort of driven there. It was like there was something curious and I followed it. You know, I started researching, not because I was in the academy. I had given up on this hope of going back to school and getting a PhD. I had had this long career at Oracle and I left after 17 years of serving as an executive there. And then I started doing executive coaching. And I had a number of observations that came out of my own corporate experience that I'm processing. I'm trying to figure out, some people call multipliers my post-Oracle therapy book, because I'm trying to make sense of things that I have seen in the workplace. And now I'm out coaching really smart, driven leaders. And I'm seeing some of the issues that they're struggling with. And I'm looking at brilliant leaders who kind of shut down people around them. And I'm talking to this tech executive that I was coaching, and I'm explaining to him how some leaders use their intelligence in a viral way. They have contagious intelligence. Like, they're smart, but people around them get smarter because of how they use their own ideas and capabilities. And I'm saying, it's like they have this kind of amplifier effect. And I'm like, yeah, but it's kind of more like almost mathematical. It's more multiplier effect. And so that's this conversation that we're having. And I need to find some research to back up this claim I'm making just based on this observation. And I go looking for, surely someone has done some research on this. And I go looking out in the Harvard Business Review, and I go looking everywhere I can find, and no one's done research on this. And so I did what I had done for two decades in my career up to that point, which is something needed. There was a job that needed to get done and no one else had done it. So I'm like, well, why not me? And it needed to be done. And it didn't feel hard to me. It just felt like a need. And so I followed it and I found out I was actually a pretty good researcher. And that's kind of what I do. I research, I write, I teach. It's like a cycle on repeat.
And maybe just very on a very high level, how do you approach such an idea? What would be the first step after you found out no one else did anything in a way that you were looking for on something? What would be the first step or the first thing you would do to research?
Well, I think, you know, you start with, you know, you kind of follow the scientific method. You start with an observation and then you're like, well, what is the question that we're trying to find the answer to? What is the hypothesis we're trying to test? So then you form your question. Mm-hmm. And for me, I started with, you know, why is it that some leaders seem to amplify intelligence and capability in others, and other leaders drain it, or, you know, suck the life right out of the team, might be a more colloquial way to describe it. And so then you try to figure out, well, how do you answer that question? And who really has the answer to the question? I think the thing I did in the research that was a little bit novel was most people study leadership by studying leaders. Mm-hmm. And they ask, you know, they watch leaders, they ask leaders like what their philosophy is and what they do. And I'm like, a leader certainly doesn't understand the effect they're having on other people. Part of the problem is they're clueless to that. So I went and asked people about their leaders, and leaders who had this kind of amplifying effect on them, where hard problems get solved, where, you know, there's energy, where there's intelligence and capability. And then I contrasted it to, you know, again, this same person. You know, it's me working for leader A versus me working for leader B. I'm the same person, but in effect, I'm very different around these two leaders. And so I went and looked at, what does leadership look like through the eye of the beholder? There's a saying in English that beauty is, you know, through the eye of the beholder. And we all think, you know, something different looks beautiful. Well, good leadership is very much in the eye of the beholder. And I wanted to know, what is it that leaders do that make you brilliant and work at your best and do your best thinking and your best work? What do those kind of leaders do?
Let's talk about your newest book, right? Impact Players, your latest book. Mm. What's an impact player? When I heard about it and I read about it and I heard you listen to you talking about it, I was like, oh yeah, I know that.
You know, an impact player is someone who brings extraordinary value to a situation and to their work. They do work that's of inordinate value in organizations, but they also raise the level of play for the whole team. Teams get better around these people. So they're people who are making this extraordinary contribution. And what I was really in this research trying to understand is, you know, in a room full of equally smart, talented, capable people, why is it that some people work in a way that they like get stuck going through the motions and other people are really making a difference? And so I guess in essence, it's the difference between someone who is a strong, capable position holder in an organization versus someone who is a difference maker in that organization.
And how does someone become like that? Because I find it very interesting. I also have a team, and when I heard about the concept, I immediately knew, and also from my experience from people, I knew these people, they came to my mind, and I knew exactly who had what you were describing without others being less of value. But just in general, some people who just that they have something different about them. And I'm just curious, how does one become like that?
Let's start with what we found was different between the impact players and what I call the ordinary contributors. And maybe even before I get into that, it's important to define these terms, because the ordinary contributor is not a slacker. It's mm-hmm. not a lackey. It's not someone who's not capable or not doing a good job. They're rock solid contributors, mm-hmm. but they're not the impact players, and they're not necessarily difference makers inside organizations. And what we found when we looked at the difference between this is we found that they do five things very differently, mm-hmm. and they handle five types of situations really differently. And these are situations that are, well, let me tell you what the situations are. First is how they deal with messy problems, you know, problems without clear owners, how they deal with, number two, unclear roles, where it's not clear who's in charge, which, you know, in a lot of work settings feels like every meeting, every project, like lots of collaborators, unclear who's the leader. The third situation is unforeseen obstacles, where something out of your control drops in your path and blocks you. The fourth is how they deal with moving targets, where goals are changing, budgets are changing, situations are changing, the work is changing while you're working on it. So it's like when the goal box is moving as you're shooting at it. And then the last is how they deal with unrelenting demands, where the workload is increasing faster than your resources are increasing. Maybe it's that state of being overwhelmed, like there's just too much for me to do. And each of these situations, I call them everyday challenges, because they are everywhere you go. You know, they're not endemic to one industry or one geography. You're going to find them anywhere you go. They're the perennial challenges of the modern workplace. But what's common across all of these is ambiguity and uncertainty. And so fundamentally, the difference between the impact players and others, the ordinary contributors, is how they deal with situations that are fraught with uncertainty and messy. And fundamentally, what they do differently than others is that they move toward those situations. Situations that feel out of their control, like I'm not in charge, but they make themselves in charge. So that's the background to get to the answer to your question is, how do you become an impact player? Is you master handling ambiguous and uncertain situations. And that mastery is actually pretty simple. It's simply that you move toward them rather than away from them. I am a native Californian, and so I think a lot in terms of the coast and oceans and waves. And, you know, most of us have had, or maybe all of us, anyone listening has had this experience where you're sort of standing at the coast and the ocean, and, you know, you see a big wave coming and you have to make a decision. What do you do with it? Do you kind of turn your back on it and head back to shore, or do you dive into it? And, you know, the experienced surfers and ocean swimmers, they dive into those waves. Like, they realize that that wave is bigger than them, that it's likely to tumble them. But instead of just standing there and letting it tumble them, they take control of the wave by, you know, going through it and under that wave. And it's very much what the impact players do. They move toward uncertainty and then they turn it into opportunity.
And from a perspective of culture and also leadership, it's interesting what, not just from an inside perspective, but also from the outside, helps me to develop in that direction. Because that's what, I mean, I cannot influence directly what others are doing in their inside and how they, you know, how they handle stuff and how confident they maybe are and solution oriented. But I mean, for me, it's very interesting what I can do in terms of the parameters that I can influence in the outside to help people to develop this mindset.
Yeah, I think the way they work is they don't necessarily work harder, mm-hmm. and they're not necessarily working smarter in the way we often talk about this. They're working in a way that is more confident, mm-hmm. more courageous. They're taking charge of situations where they're not really in charge. Mm-hmm. Essentially, they're stepping up and leading in places that nobody told them to lead, which is why I'm so excited to be talking to you and your views on feminist leadership, because this is something that women tend to be really good at. Like, women aren't always in charge. And I think a lot of times women think, oh man, like, what would I do if I were in charge? But I'll tell you what women all around the world are great at is putting themselves in charge of situations where something's gone wrong. Like, there's an injustice done. There's a need. Like, there's a problem and somebody needs to solve it. And this is something I noticed that women do well, and it's not that men don't do this, but they have this ability to say, like, almost like, honey, did you see that? Like, wait a minute, there's a child without a partner in the dance. We should do something about this. It's like one of the things that, like, the heart of women tend to do is we see unmet needs and we rally around them. And it's a form of leadership that is built around rallying and activism. It requires some confidence. And so what leaders can do to enable this is to create an environment where people can step up and take charge when they don't feel like they have the formal authority to be in charge. And boy, there's a lot more to say about that.
Yeah. And I would like to talk about that, because how do I do that? I can address it directly, but I might not always get the chance to directly address it. You know what I mean? Because there is maybe a chaotic situation, or there's culture, or there are even levels of managers between, you know, me and other, you know, people. The higher I get in the hierarchy, the more levels of managers are there in between what I do and what people are actually feeling and what the culture is making possible.
Well, I think let's look at it from a couple angles. One is the would-be impact player. You know, the woman who wants to really make a difference and make an impact, like, what does she need to do? And then let's look at, you know, what is the role of the manager? What is her manager? And, like, what does that leader need to do? What could she do to enable this other person to step up? You know, it starts with having, like, what the psychologist would call a strong internal locus of control, this, and a strong sense of agency. It's this belief. It's not about being in charge. It's not actually about being in control of a situation. I deeply believe that control is as much a state of mind as it is a state of affairs. Meaning, we are in control when we tell ourselves we're in control of a situation. And it's not like I'm the master of the situation. I'm in charge. It just simply is this belief that I can influence it. And then it's remembering or reminding ourselves that people want us to influence a situation. I want to go back to how I did this research. As part of the research, or the fundamentals of the research, is I didn't go identify people I thought were impact players and ask them, like, how do you think about your job? What do you do? I did that after their managers identified them. So I went to managers and, you know, asked them to identify the impact players versus the ordinary contributors on their team, as well as the under contributors on their team. Equally smart, capable, talented people. And I started to build this view of contribution and leadership through the eyes of the beholder. In this case, it's the leader. And I asked them, like, essentially, what is it that people do that you value? Now, here's the list. So I built this list. It was a fun little piece of the research that I kind of threw in at the last minute. I asked 170 managers, what is it that people on your team do that really frustrates you? Like, that makes your job of boss really hard, aggravating. And it's funny, most of them said, oh, no, nothing really. And I'm like, oh, come on, tell me. And they had a huge list. So I, you know, ended up with this big list of things that people do that really annoy their leaders. And then I asked them, what is it that people do that you absolutely love, that make your job as executive, as president, as department manager, that make your job just beautiful, like fun and easy and rewarding. And they're like, oh yeah, I'll tell you. Here's what the list looks like. I want to focus on the things that people do that managers love. Number one, do things without being asked. Number two, anticipate problems and have a plan to solve them. Number three, help your teammates. Number four, do just a little extra. And it's not like above and beyond. It's just a little small extra. You know that surprise when someone gives you a report and then they're like, oh, you know what? I kind of just went ahead and highlighted the three things you need to know. Not a lot of extra work. It's just like, wow, you did that? Really? You know, like, that's amazing. Number five, be curious. Ask good questions. Number six, ask for feedback. Number seven, admit your mistakes. Fix them fast. Number nine, eight, bring good energy and have fun. Make others laugh. Is in the top 10 list. Number nine, figure out what to do for yourself. And number 10, finish the job without having to be reminded to do so. Now, when you step back and you look at that list, like what they want is they want people who are helpful and they want people to take charge. They essentially want people to be self-directed and self-managing. And so you get this two-sided conversation. When you talk to managers, like, and then, okay, what bugs you? Here's a little bit of that list. Number one, what really bothers managers is when they give their boss problems without solutions, when they wait for their boss to tell them what to do, when they make their boss chase them down and remind them what to do, when they just do their piece, not worry about the big picture, et cetera, et cetera. When you step back and look at this, there's two conversations going on. The bosses are saying, I really hate having to manage people. I hate having to tell people what to do. I hate having to remind them. Managers don't like managing people. And what they really like are people who figure that out themselves. Like, oh, wow, this is a problem. Let me go solve it. Oh, this is going to be an issue. Let me do a workaround. You know what? Let me follow up on that. But then you hear contributors saying, oh, I don't know. I don't really have power. My boss didn't ask me to do that, so I'm reluctant to do it. And it's like these two sides are living in different worlds. And I think if I have a message to would-be impact players is people want you to step up and take charge. You know, if you're in that meeting that's spinning and nobody's leading, it's helpful to say, hey, would it be helpful if I like provided an agenda for our conversation? People want you to do that. People want you to volunteer to solve problems, to take charge. Now, I am not saying somebody should march themselves into the corporate boardroom and take over the meeting. But what I am saying is if you see something, people probably want you to do something about it. Like you have more power than you think, and people want you to take control over situations that are spinning out of control.
What I found very interesting about your book about the concept of multipliers was that there are so many things that I as a manager, for example, would impact or would influence what other people are doing without knowing it. So I'm curious, are there things that I as a manager might do that people would hinder people or hold them back from doing exactly what you were describing? You know what I mean?
Absolutely. You know, we find that, so let me break this up into a couple pieces. You know, we find that some people are more impactful than others, but we also find that everyone wants to work this way and everyone can work this way. One of the impediments to people being impact players is their own mindsets and their own limiting beliefs. Another impediment is their leaders. You know, the impact player way of leading, it's a fluid form of leadership. It's about stepping up and leading, but then also stepping back and following others. It's about very much situational-based leadership. The situation needs a leader. Let me step up and do that. But it's very much fluid, like the way one bird, a flock of migrating birds, like has one bird that flies to the front of the V formation and leads, but they don't stay there forever. They rotate back and they let another bird come up. It's a rotating form of leadership. to be able to step up and take charge and to speak out and to take ownership and to finish jobs and wrestle down complex situations, we find that the best leaders create a dual environment. And they create an environment of both safety and stretch. And by safety, I mean they make it okay for people to not just do their job, but to do the job that needs to be done, to step out of the bounds of their job description. They need to create safety so people can raise their hand and say, I'd be happy to lead this conversation, or I'm willing to lead that project. But they also create safety so that people can step back and not have to lead all the time, which I believe is one of the things that keeps women out of powerful leadership positions. It's because, like, I am already exhausted trying to manage my family, my home front, my relationships, and work. Like, I'm not sure I can take a big job. Well, with fluid leadership, you don't have to be the boss all the time. You can step up, make a difference, roll back, follow others. So the manager has to create safety for people to work this way. They have to create safety for people to say, you know what, this is a big problem. I can't fix it by myself. I'm going to pull in help, but I'm not going to let go of the problem and just hand it off to the higher ups in the organization. All of these require intellectual safety and psychological safety, very much like Amy Edmondson's work out of Harvard. But it also requires stretch. Stretch meaning it requires leaders to be comfortable asking other people to be uncomfortable. It requires leaders who don't let people hang out in easy jobs. It requires leaders who don't let people sort of idle away in contributor mode. It's leaders who ask you to do hard things and expect you to stay with it even when it gets hard. And of course, they're willing to back you up and help you get through the hard stuff, but they don't pull back ownership and say, oh, it's hard. Don't worry, dear. I'll do the hard stuff. They allow you to push through that. But when leaders create both safety and stretch, and they bring those together, that's when people are at their very best.
I find that so interesting because when you were talking, I was thinking what you were describing, what an impact player is very much part of what a good leader is or what a good leader does. So holding this ambiguity, dealing with uncertainty, having the mindset and the behaviors to approach that and taking this, I feel for me, the responsibility, the sense of responsibility and ownership is so crucial. And I find it so interesting in terms of when we look at the organization of the future and what would be a democratic, more just way of approaching the way that we distribute power. I find it so thrilling and interesting what we would require of people, of each individual, to handle that in organizations. And all that's one aspect, the individuals that would form an organization that maybe could work with, I don't know if you know Frederic Laloux's work with reinventing organizations, with, you know, with a new form of a more teal organization, something that is more, in a way, more fluid in terms of the way that it's organized. The hierarchy is not gone, but it's different and it's moving. And I'm super into this whole thing and we're trying along with the team. And I think your work is such a, because in the essence, if you say anyone could be that way, you know, anyone could be an impact player. Not everyone is.
It is. And it's the kind of leadership you need to have that kind of agile, fluid organization. You know, we've often, historically, we've looked at leadership as people who wield power and who sort of amass power and then they maintain power. Mm-hmm. Like these are the leaders historically. But today's leaders are people who can assume power. Like, and I mean assume. This is sort of a, like a nuance of English on this. So I'm not sure how this works in German, but in English, like to assume power means one, to like you assume a position, you step into a position of power, but it's also in your head to assume that you have power. It's much like an activist says, wait a minute, I could do something about this. I'm going to assume I have power in this situation. But it's not just people who assume power. It's people who share power and who increase power. You know, we often don't like to talk about power. Power has got all sorts of negative connotations, but we need leaders who can hold power, but share it, and in the process, increase the power of the whole organization. Like, we need a lot of powerful people. We're trying to do something hard. And you talk about the Thiel organization. One of the terms I love on this came from two German executives. So it was Thomas and Andreas Strungmann, who started their company. It was a biotech company. I think they made generic pharmaceuticals out of a small village outside of Munich. I think they described it to me as like a village outside of a village, you know, outside of Munich. And they built, it was Hexel Corporation, and they built this organization with something they called the amoeba model. And their amoeba model was just this understanding that anyone inside of the organization could, like an amoeba, they wanted their organization not to be a rigid hierarchy, but they wanted people like to change shape and move toward the problem. And I remember the one example they talked about was the assistant in the customer service department who saw this recurring issue with customer service. And she's like, wow, we really need to create a dashboard so our customers can like see when blah, blah, blah. And she just like kind of raised her head and said, I'd like to do this. She then assembles a team. They go and they solve that problem. And they just, it's about letting talent flow to where it's needed. And it really is, it's assumptive leadership. I'm going to assume I have power. I'm going to assume a position of power. I'm going to share that power. I'm going to share the success. And then when I'm done, I'm going to roll back to like my day job or to sort of my base position so I can be ready for the next thing.
And once that is happening, what's also happening is that I, no matter in which position I am, no matter how high up I might be, I get more windows of opportunity or more windows in which I can just lean back, what you were describing earlier, and just relax. And I don't always have to hold everything by myself, because in the traditional way of organizing power in any organization, and that just doesn't have to be just in the private sector, I sometimes find it almost inhuman how much responsibility is distributed to single people. I mean, it can't be the best solution. And so that's I think it's a beautiful way.
I think you are exactly right, Vera. It just can't be the best way. And, you know, as someone who's studied leadership and coached a lot of executives, people who hold really significant positions and power, when you really look under the cover of their life and their job and you really understand, they have a debilitating amount of pressure, and it's lonely in those organizations, and they develop a distorted sense of reality because people don't tell them the truth. And they carry so much pressure that they often fail to look up and see what's going on around them. It just can't be a good way of working for some people to feel this crippling sense of power and pressure, and other people to be underutilized. I think it was one of the things that drove me in Multipliers is I said, wait a minute, our organizations are full of teams where certain people feel overworked and other people feel deeply underutilized. Yeah, can't we share, can't we balance this out? And but then when I did my research for Impact Players, you find managers desperately wanting people to step up and help them lead the team. They want deputies, they want assistants, and I don't mean secretaries, I mean people who will assist them in the leading of the team. You know, they want to multiply the number of leaders they have inside the organization. Now, not every manager, like there, I'm sure there are dozens, hundreds of people listening who are like, Liz, you haven't met my boss. My boss doesn't want that. So yeah, there are some people where doing that kind of assumptive leadership might be dangerous. You know, if that's the case. But what I would challenge people is your boss probably wants you to step up far more than you believe. And there's ways to do it that you don't get your hand slapped. You get kind of a high five.
And part of the work that I do also here with this podcast for many years now is that I would love it if everyone would just feel comfortable with the word leadership or any other word that we would use at that time, but in the future. But I think in an ideal world, we would all just take the power and work with it and also feel, I don't think that entitled is the right word, but that we are allowed, that any one of us is allowed to take it and to feel like this can be his, her own thing. Because once this way up the ladder or into the organization and your way towards more power and more impact, the way that you want to have it, yeah, and the way that it's fitting for your talents and your strength, if that way is only open for certain people with certain backgrounds who have certain, who feel like this is a way where they would not only be able to open a door, but also feel welcome. If we're not able to do that, we will never have a just way of accessing power, of distributing power. And we will not find the best way in politics, but also in business to really contribute and make a difference and do good things in the best possible way, or I would say in a way that is moving forward. And mm-hmm. I think it's so much about this leadership concept. And I wanted to ask you if you think that anyone can be a leader, because I would love that. And I think if anyone could be a multiplier, why not be a leader?
Well, okay, so let's demystify what it means to be a leader. Mm-hmm. I would take it more into the verb, like out of the noun mm-hmm. of a leader, and more into, I think everyone can lead situations, provide leadership in a situation, can lead a team. I don't know that I've met someone who can't do that. And you think back, now there might be some people who have some physical or neurological challenges that might not be possible for them. That is true. But you think back to your days in elementary school. Now, I do not know the German primary or elementary school system, so I don't know about grades. But like, what grade are you in when you're about age 7 or 8?
Probably second grade.
Second grade? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's the same thing in the United States. Like, look at how we treat leadership then. We assume that every kid is capable of leading. Now, often you have in the classroom, you have these duties, like someone needs to lead the group out to research. Someone, you know, is responsible for putting this away. You don't say, well, there are some kids who can lead and others who follow. Everyone takes a turn leading something, presenting something. Now, some people are better at it than others. But when you go back to like, are we all capable? Absolutely. Everyone has the capability to do it, but we have to think about it more situational, more incremental. I want to share a metaphor that keeps coming through my mind. I think our organizations have been built kind of with the assumption, like the way big planes are designed. So you take like a huge Airbus, you know, big intercontinental plane for us, you know, Boeing 747, big Airbus. And like, you've got the captains, you know, the pilots up there in the front, and they're sort of like executives in the scenario. And then you've got like the flight attendants are sort of middle management. And then you got all the passengers who are sort of like, well, we're kind of along for the ride. And you don't really get to go and open up the cockpit and go and sort of help them fly the plane. Our organizations are built this way, but most of us are in scenarios where there's just a lot going on, and there's more than the leaders know and can handle. There are more than their instruments. Now, I want to compare it to a flight I took when I was going to an island off of an island, probably off an island. So it's a little tiny, small plane. And my family and I are traveling on this plane, And it's our family, maybe a couple others. This was not our plane. This is not like my personal plane. We were just on somebody's plane and there's a single pilot and us. And it's a little, what we call puddle jumper. And we're getting in, put on our seatbelts, and the pilot turns back to us and he said, okay, you know, we're going to be up in there for just like 20 minutes or 30 minutes. He said, keep your eyes open. And if you see anything, tell me about it. And see what? And I'm like, oh my goodness, what is going on here? And I'm like, I didn't realize we're helping him to fly the plane. But it's what he was inviting us to do, which is there's just one of me. Anything could happen. Mm-hmm. Like this is just a little plane and I've got to keep my eyes peeled for, I don't know, birds or whatever. And so he made us kind of his co-pilots. Mm-hmm. And what he was saying is, help me lead you on this little journey. And I think our managers are more like this pilot mm-hmm. right now, where they don't have all knowledge. And, you know, we're just in the back along for the ride. Like we have to help our leaders kind of navigate through very uncertain times. And they want people who will help them to do that. And we need organizations more like that. Like, hey, if you see something, say something, please. I don't have eyes in the back of my head. My instruments are only so good.
We are unfortunately coming to the end already. First of all, I wanted to ask, where can people find your work? I mean, we are linking your books, your website, anything else where you're particularly active or where can people can connect with your work and look it up?
Well, the website is a good start. On social media, you can follow me on LinkedIn. I'm pretty easy to find, Liz Wiseman, and same on Twitter, at Liz Wiseman.
So we'll put that in the show notes. I don't forget. And if we put aside what we were talking about, because the book is published, you're probably working on something new. I'm so curious about, are there maybe any topics, something that you're working on or just something that you're very interested in at the moment? Because I find it so interesting what people are having on their minds and thinking about.
Well, I've got a couple of research projects that I'll be working on soon. And the one that's probably been with me the longest, I'm not sure it'll be the next one, but the one I've been thinking about the longest is I'm really wondering about what is the effect of people's first boss. Mm-hmm. So I've studied the effect that bosses have, either this multiplying and diminishing effect, and I've studied a fair bit about how we end up accidentally diminishing, meaning shutting people down with the best of intentions. But I'm really curious about the formative experiences we have at work and what is the power for good or for ill of somebody's first boss mm-hmm. and kind of the timing of leadership. I think we undervalue the importance of being someone's like formative or first boss. I think our first bosses kind of either make us or wreck us, and they can really mess with our heads. Kind of wrapping up our whole conversation, Vera, is, you know, whether someone shows up to work like an impact player or settles into this kind of routine or rut of being an ordinary contributor, I think has a lot to do with the aspirations and the power that our first boss assumed we had.
Yeah. I find that interesting because it's like we are socialized. I don't know if socialized is not the right word. In German, it's sozialisiert.
It is the right word.
Yeah, okay, yeah, we're socialized in the work environment, like our parents or the first teacher is someone who is for school, it's the teachers, at home, it's our parents, at work, it would be the first people we are experiencing, how they use more power, the power that they have over us. Yeah. So, and they socialize us. And I think it's very interesting how different also people are socialized. And when it comes to the term of work, like, how do you feel? What do you think? How you need to behave? Yeah. So that's
right. I think of like my professors I had when I was a freshman in college, my first year of college, and how those people really shaped my whole college yeah. experience and how I think. And I think about my children who've all been through their freshman year of college, like, kind of the imprint that was created by those leaders. And I haven't done this research. It's something I'm fascinated with. But what I would urge everyone is, if you are somebody's first boss, they're new to the organization, they're just out of college, like, be at your best, because it will affect them for the rest of their life.
Yeah. I have a little son, and we are thinking so much about what environment, also because of my experiences in school. I had great experience, but I also had bad experiences with how teachers deal with power. In the end, it's all about power. And I'm looking into different concepts of, even now he's not even in school, it's kindergarten. What's the philosophy on which they are working in this institution? And it's so interesting. What's the philosophy that we are basing our leadership on? And how are people educated and skilled to do that? Yeah.
I think you're absolutely right. And it has everything to do with the assumption that is held about power.
Yeah.
Who holds the power? The teacher? The boss?
Yeah.
I remember this one thing. One of my first bosses, this was back in the 80s, and he just said to me, I was wearing this like power suit and these heels. They were these kind of like plum colored purple heels, high heels. And he said to me, he goes, Liz, you don't have to wear those. And like what he was saying is just like, relax. You don't have to like impress anyone. He's like, come to work comfortable. And it really shaped me. It's like, oh no, yeah, I don't have to play a game. Mm-hmm. I don't have to wear a uniform. Mm-hmm. I can do what is smart. And little things like that really shaped me. It's like, oh no, I don't have to do this. I don't have to do that if it doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice.
A conversation for another time. And I hope you'll invite me back sometime when I have some evidence-based research to share with you on that.
And I've just a tiny last question, because people who are here, they love to read. And now we have a lot of books from you to read. But aside from that, is there maybe one or a couple of books that you would love to give to other people, or your favorite books? I know for someone who reads a lot, this can be a big question, but something that you like to recommend?
I'm going to look at my bookshelf. I really love Ed Catmull's Creativity Inc. Ed Catmull is the founder, CEO of Pixar. And it's like the management system that allowed that organization to produce such genius work. Because it wasn't just a couple geniuses. It was really how they build intelligence all through the organization. I love this book. You Can't Go Wrong Reading Mindset by Carol Dweck. I've really enjoyed Made to Stick by Dan and Chip Heath. And well, that's a lot.
Thank you so much, Liz, for your time, for your great work, for being here, and all the best for
you. It's absolutely my pleasure. Thank you for your leadership and inspiring other people to lead, to just go out there and lead.
Thank you. Ich hoffe sehr, dass du genauso viel mitnehmen konntest aus dieser Folge wie ich, dass du für dich auch nochmal vielleicht die Gelegenheit genutzt hast, zu reflektieren darüber, was du beitragen kannst, um andere zu ermutigen, zu empowern, daran zu bestärken, sich aktiv, proaktiv einzubringen, und wo du vielleicht auch selbst für dich nochmal hier und da vielleicht Lust hast, das eine oder andere anders zu machen und auszuprobieren. Und natürlich die große Frage, mit der wir uns hier im Podcast auch immer wieder beschäftigen: Was bedeutet das für die Strukturen und die Kultur, die wir in Zukunft schaffen wollen, in die wir uns auch als Organisationen entwickeln möchten? Mehr dazu kommt hier sicherlich auch an anderer Stelle noch. Jetzt danke ich dir erstmal von Herzen fürs Zuhören, wünsche dir eine richtig schöne Woche und freue mich, wenn wir uns hier nächste Woche wieder hören. Bis dahin und alles Liebe, deine Vera.